This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. Richard Pollock filling the host chair for Drew Mindell. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. Michael Remus is behind the board working as hard as ever. Great to have Remus on board. We had some action-packed shows this past week. Obviously, the big trade, that which we'll be breaking down a ton today, and recapping the move of Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian to Buffalo in exchange for Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford and some prospects, which we'll get more information on. Of course, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News is going to join us later on in the show to discuss the Buffalo perspective of this move, give us his perspective on Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford, of course, and the players that the Jets acquired. We're going to have Guy Flaming on to talk about the prospects involved in this trade. And that's the big thing here, guys. We don't really know a lot about the prospects that have been acquired, and not many people do. And in the first hour, Ken Daniels is going to join us. Play-by-play boys for Fox Sports Detroit. The Jets, of course, are in Detroit tonight to play Motown, the only time this year that they're playing at Detroit. Of course, this is part of the Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. And good afternoon, gentlemen.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day, Richie. I'm just wondering where the chocolates are. Like, where are the flowers? Where are the chocolates? Like, I see a couple of hearts here that from Boston Pizza, those little hearts that you put up on the wall. But, like, what's going on here? It's Valentine's Day. Well, I was expecting Dave Manuk at least to come through with, a bouquet of flowers for me here.
I have nothing. I mean, I guess I'm out of the Valentine's game day stuff. I just don't know what to do with it anymore because it is a fun day, I guess. But as you know, I and I will be having a romantic Valentine's Day together later.
Richie, I asked Gary Lawless to be my Valentine's, but he declined, so still looking for a Valentine's. Maybe we can find one for me throughout the show. So
before we talk about the Jets weekend review, Remus came in studio. How about, he came in early to do some prep, apparently. He came in and his girlfriend brought him a hot dog early this morning.
Now that is love. If a hot dog love, I don't know what is.
And he appreciated it. Like, he's happy about, like, there's guys out there, I'm sure, listening who would be happy with the hot dog. Remus, do you want to?
It was a Costco dog, too. It was great.
Remus, what was on there? Like, did you put ketchup, relish on there?
I came here. There's mustard in the fridge here that I knew about.
Oh, so nice.
I didn't dress it until I came here. You don't want to be traveling with mustard on the dog. Gets soggy.
Yeah, no, we already know that Leah is an excellent catch. But the fact that, I mean, that is there any deal better than that hot dog from Costco?
Well, that leads really well into the deal this week. That was Tyler Myers, of course, coming to the Winnipeg Jets. And, guys, we're going to obviously talk about the trade and who won the trade quickly. The players in the big blockbuster deal were in the lineup Thursday night in Nashville. Tyler Myers, I'm speaking of, and of course Drew Stafford. The prospect Joel Armia is reported St. John's, and of course Brandon Lemieux will be in Barrie of the OHL in the first round pick. We'll see who that is come June in Sunrise, Florida. Before I ask you guys about the game itself and recapping the Jets' performance, I thought they played pretty well overall. What was your thoughts on the performance of the new acquisitions, being Drew Stafford up front and Tyler Myers on the back end?
Well, I think you got to be pretty excited with the way Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford played, Richie, in the first game against Nashville. I thought the Jets deserved to win that game, and I think you guys probably would agree with that. Pekka Rinne, as he has really done all of this year and for big parts of his career, really, I thought, stole that game, and that's the way hockey goes. You get a hot goaltender, he can steal the game. But Tyler Myers playing with Tobias Enstrom, I thought he was pretty solid out there. He maybe played a little bit less than he was averaging with Buffalo, sure. Not by much, but I think you're probably going to see that continue as the Jets really use four defensemen, especially in special team situations. But Drew Stafford, I thought, he had a couple of good drives to the net there, and he was throwing his body around a little bit. Obviously, he didn't get a point. Mm-hmm. Michael Frolik getting the only goal there, but I thought he was pretty solid. And, I think a lot of Jets fans were a little bit nervous when he took the Shea Weber shot to the knee there. Mm-hmm. But, he's okay, and he was skating today at Joe Louis Arena. But I think, Richie, when you have players like Myers and Stafford obviously 4 years older than Myers, but when you have veterans of the NHL and they come into a game on the road and also switching conferences. I think when you have veterans, it's a lot easier for them to transition in, as opposed to you're putting a guy who's in his second year, a 21-year-old, 22-year-old, you're putting a guy like that into the lineup. But Tyler Myers, doesn't he seem like a composed guy? I mean, it seemed like he did half a dozen interviews before that game, as well as Drew Stafford. And it seems like these guys, even though they've only played one game, they seem to be fitting right into this team. I think we're going to have a good debate for years to come about who won this trade. But I think these guys are really going to add a nice element to this Jets team.
I mean, I thought there was a little trepidation in their game to start, but I thought that quickly kind of got rid of that fairly quickly because, you know, they're veterans, like as he says. And so they were able to get into the flow of the game. And you could see, I mean, everybody was joking around after practice before the game. They were talking about how this is the Minnesota Mafia because Stafford knows a lot of the guys on the team because he's lives in Minnesota. And so he knows Bufflin and Wheeler and that sort of, and Stewart. So he has that kind of connection. So there's already a familiarity. They probably, a lot of them skate together in the summer. So there's probably already kind of a knowledge base that these guys have. Myers is a little more of an unknown. I think the only person he really said he knew was Enstrom a little bit, and he said he knew Ladd because I think they shared an agent. But I actually thought they came in pretty well, and I like Ezzie. I thought the Jets could have won the game. I thought the difference was Pekka Rinne, and without that, I thought it was a pretty good game for the Jets. I thought, you know, you're going up. I mean, people forget. They ever think that the Jets are going to win every single game.
Yeah.
I mean, the Nashville Predators are a pretty good team. Right?
First in the league.
So you're not going into Nashville's building where they've been very good.
Yeah.
And let's be realistic. I mean, the Jets 5-on-5, I thought, were the vastly better team. And if it wasn't for the unfortunate penalties they took, you know, where Nashville scored two goals on their power play, you know, this could have been a different game.
And Dave, if you're Paul Maurice and you're watching these players in their first game in their new uniforms, you're not judging the game based on necessarily points or even ice time, really. You're seeing how do they fit in. Because as we talked about on Wednesday's show, right after the trade was made Wednesday, and you know Richie was opining about who he thought the lines would be, and Richie correctly predicted that Drew Stafford would slot in on the second line, and we weren't sure where Tyler Myers would slot in, either with Ben Chiarot or Tobias Enstrom. But I think if you're Paul Maurice, Richie, you're looking at these guys and you're basing it on a shift-by-shift basis, and it's too early to start making snap judgments. You know, you hear a lot about systems and all that, but really these guys are just trying to fit in with the team. I don't think he's trying to cram in systems.
No, I mean, it's not that complicated anyways, Ezzie. I mean, in reality, maybe because Buffalo doesn't play too much of a system at times. That's not necessarily Ted Nolan is not exactly an X's nose guy. He's a motivational guy and clearly not doing a great job there. And there's rumors already, and we'll ask Mike Harrington about it, that Luke Richardson might be taking over eventually in Buffalo. Maybe they'll be cleaning house this offseason, and I wouldn't be opposed to there being a change of coaches over in Buffalo. I want to ask you guys, did you notice anything different about the Jets roster overall when they, you know, in Thursday's game? I know it's only one game and it's hard to get a read. Is there one thing that you noticed about the Jets team that was different than, say, the Jets team with Kane and Bogosian in the lineup 2 weeks ago?
Well, I think we talked about this on Wednesday, Richie. You're losing some foot speed.
Yeah.
When you're talking about Evander Kane, I think you're 99% of the league is losing to Evander Kane when it comes to foot speed. That's why Tim Murray went after Evander Kane. That's his biggest asset. Obviously, he's a goal scorer. Mm-hmm. The guy can skate better than almost all NHL players, really. He's got that God-given ability. But as far as the dynamic they bring, I think Tyler Myers, it's pretty obvious. I mean, anybody can tell you this. You're getting an upgrade on size over Zach Bogosian. Zach Bogosian's not a small guy by any stretch of the imagination. But Tyler Myers is, you know, what, the second or third biggest guy in the league after Chara and maybe John Scott. So you're getting some size, but I think you're getting an upgrade on physicality when it comes to Tyler Myers. And again, Zach Bogosian, we've seen him, but I think with Zach Bogosian, it's kind of it's spotty as far as when he wants to add add that element to his game. We've seen him over the years kind of, I think, try to be less offensive, especially when he's paired up with Tobias Enstrom, Richie. But I think when you're talking about the insertion of Myers and Stafford into the lineup, I think, if anything, it's kind of like a breath of fresh air. I think you're getting players here, and you're getting, I think, guys that you know have had success, and it's an upgrade in talent, I think, and an upgrade really in veteran leadership, and especially when you're talking about Evander Kane was not going to play for the rest of the season.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
And now you know Stafford's there, Richie, and he's going to be able to he's going to be a big part of that secondary offense for the rest of the season. We don't know beyond that because he's a UFA.
I think their passing probably goes up. I do think, guys, that they do, as you mentioned, the foot speed element, which I agree with. I think they also lose a bit of physicality. I mean, they're not, you know, I mean, you have Evander Kane coming in on the forecheck, and he's pretty ruthless on the forecheck. I mean, he can put guys through the boards. Zach Bogosian plays a pretty mean game as well, so it's going to be something that's going to be interesting to see against bigger teams how that fares. Against a team like Detroit, maybe obviously the skating tonight is more of an issue. Not to say the guys they got aren't good skaters, just I thought the guys they dealt with are tremendous skaters, but I think their game's a little bit smarter, though. So I think there's a give and take, Dave.
I was going to say the same thing. I think that they lose a little bit of physicality, but they gain kind of a more cerebral game.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't think they lose physicality. I mean, I guess Richie and I are disagreeing here. I don't think you lose. I think you lose physicality with Stafford a little bit with Kane. I don't know if you lose physicality. I think you gain physicality with Myers over Bogosian, actually. But
I think Myers needs to be poked. He needs to be prodded to engage. He'll be aggressive if you kind of. And he doesn't need to be aggressive, Ezzy. I'm not saying he needs to be based on his style of play. He's big. Use your reach, you know, positioning. Make sure you get in the way, and you're okay. I'm saying that Bogosian played a pretty mean game. I mean, he took some stupid penalties, don't get me wrong. But he wasn't easy to play against in terms of, I thought, his speed and his... I mean, he'd two-hand you if you... You know, he did a few times, but if you went the wrong way. If you heard Patrick Kane's comments, saying he was actually really surprised the Jets traded... that traded Zach Bogosian because he was very difficult to play against. By the way, quickly, guys, and you probably haven't seen this, interesting comment, not something we didn't know. Interesting comment by Kyle Quincy this morning in the Detroit Free Press, an article by Helene St. James of the Detroit Free Press, saying, a quote from Kyle Quincy, just to get Kane out of the dressing room was probably a good thing for them.
I saw that quote, yeah.
Myers is going to take a few weeks to get going with the new system and everything. He's going to make a few mistakes for sure, so hopefully we can capitalize on that. Pretty candid comments. I mean, again, you're playing Detroit, great hockey town, but those comments in Winnipeg, and yeah, that's, you know, and we're talking about it now.
Yeah, and if you listen to the, or there was some video on the Detroit Free Press website too, Richie, and if you listen to it, he says the Wings lost their last game to Pittsburgh, and he said, we're not going to let that happen against the Jets too. He's a pretty outspoken guy. Yeah. But as you've mentioned before, Richie, on the show, you know, for years now, hockey's a small world. I mean, you mm-hmm. think it's, you know, there's 30 teams all across, sure. whatever, but I mean, it really is a small community, and that's evidence when you run into Jets fans pretty much anywhere in any NHL rink. But, you know, Quincy, these guys know, everybody knows kind of about Evander Kane, and whether or not you've played with him, Dave, you've played against him, and everybody knows by this point, even though Evander Kane's still young, he's been in the league now for, what, 6 years? Mm-hmm. So you know that Evander Kane has that attitude and all that. So it is interesting to hear someone say that, though, publicly. Because nowadays you don't necessarily hear that all the time.
Next segment, we're going to preview Jets Red Wings tonight, some matchups, what you would do if you were in charge, as Paul Maurice will be, and of course Mike Babcock behind the bench of the Detroit Red Wings. Quickly, guys, did anything you heard this week, anything you've seen a game now of Myers and Stafford, has your opinion on the trade, who won the trade, changed at all in the past say 48 hours?
I think it's too early to tell. I mean, especially because, sure. I mean, look, if you're a Jets fan, you're going to love the trade because you've got players who are playing for you now. Mm-hmm. If you're a Sabres fan, you've got Bogosian who will come into the lineup, and you don't know what you're getting with Kane, right? Because you're going to not see him until next season. So I think it's too early. I mean, like, on illegalcurve.com, we put up a poll that asked fans, you know, what they thought of the trade. And to be honest with you, like, almost 80% of them love the trade.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's not scientific by any stretch of the imagination, but it just goes to show you that a lot of Jets fans are right now feeling very good about this trade.
Yeah, I can tell you this much, though. After Timo Solani was traded, those numbers weren't like that. So, and the thing is, yeah, sure, Jets fans Jets fans might be biased, but if you listen to Craig Button, if you listen to some others here, the Jets did pretty well on this trade. And Dave, of course, is right here that because you're dealing with prospects and you're dealing with the first round pick, which we don't know if that'll be traded, turned into something else, mm-hmm. who that prospect will be, you know, we're not going to know who wins this trade till the years progress. But right now, it looks like Chevy did pretty good to get, you know, return on a player who probably isn't now going to ever play for the Jets again.
Detroit Red Wings, 17-4-6. At home this year, guys. Pretty good. Jets on the road, 14-9-6. We're going to break down the matchups. That game, that can be heard tonight on TSN 1290 at 6 p.m. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. Some surprises are good. like a big comeback win. Some aren't, like internet overage charges. That's why MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by surprise overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Yeah! 12:15 on Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. I'm TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Richard Pollock, filling in as host for Drew Mandel. Today, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and Michael Remus. I saw Timmy Debenham, by the way. He was in here opping earlier. We haven't seen Timmy in a while. Great to see him. He told me he hasn't seen Drew in some time, and I told him he's very fortunate.
Yeah, it's good to see Timmy. We don't see him. He doesn't produce anymore, so we're stuck with Remus. But it was just kidding, Remus. It was nice to see Tim. He's been with us, since the beginning of our show on the station.
And Remus has done a great job this week. You know, we took calls last Saturday and on Wednesday, and we appreciate all the calls because the calls were great, and we appreciate the listeners, of course. Guys, I want to talk about the Red Wings today, of course, against the Jets. This is a good team, guys, and if you remember, they came into town earlier this year. I believe they were in the second half of a back-to-back, and they played a great third period against the Winnipeg Jets and were able to get out of town with 2 points. I want to talk, guys, about matchups today. And you look at the Jets' defense, and you know they're not flipping Tyler Myers as far as we can tell, so they have three really good defense pairings, and that's Tyler Myers and Tobias Enstrom, Ben Sherratt, and Dustin Byfuglien, and Jacob Trouba, and Mark Stewart. You look at the Detroit Red Wings, guys, and there's some serious firepower here, and the thing that the Detroit Red Wings do, and you look at their lines and how they apportion their ice time, and they don't really ride anybody. And we're going to ask Ken Daniels, play-by-play man of the Detroit Red Wings for Fox Sports Detroit, next segment about that. But Ezzy, I'll start with you. You're looking at a first line of Pavel Datsyuk up the middle and Henrik Zetterberg on your second line, and then you look at Riley Sheahan on your third line there. If you're the Jets, how are you playing the matchup game today? On the road, mind you. So you have the second, you have to declare your defense pairings first, but who do you think the Jets are going to try and match up against those top lines of the Wings?
Well, Richie, you mentioned the home record that Detroit has. The Detroit Red Wings have not lost back-to-back games in regulation this year. They're the only team in the NHL that has not. To me, that's fascinating that they haven't lost, and they lost to Pittsburgh in their last game. But, so this is a team that it bounces back from losses, obviously, and it's very tough to beat at home. And, we'll get into it, some of the goaltending because Jimmy Howard's coming back and all that. But you look at the forward matchups, and the Detroit Red Wings, Richie, have always done this. They've always been a team that rolls four lines, mm-hmm. and they can move guys up and down. Guys like Justin Abdelkader move up and down the lineup. Darren Helm moving up and down the lineup, as far as the first line, second line, third line. Steven Weiss is on the fourth line now. I think, Richie, though, if you're talking about that top line with Zetterberg, Nyquist, and it looks like it'll be Abdelkader again tonight, which it has been for a lot of the season, I think you'd think that Tobias Enstrom and Tyler Myers match up against that. Now, maybe that switches during the game, and I think there's a possibility that maybe they want to get Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba out there, I guess, if they feel that the speed element is better against that line, because then you got Datsyuk, Tatar, and Helm on that second line, yeah. as you mentioned, and so I think it remains to be seen who, and then I guess you probably have Buff and Sherratt maybe against the Sheahan line. It's kind of tough to say because who do you. Because the Jets now have Buff back on defense, now it's a good problem to have. Now you kind of have a little stronger pairings there. So I guess, you guys might disagree, but I think Enstrom and Myers would go up against the Zetterberg line and then maybe Stewart and Trouba against the Datsyuk line. But, that's just my guess.
Tobias Enstrom played a real nice game against Minnesota Wild, Dave, and I think that part of that factor is that Minnesota's not a team that's going to be too physical on the forecheck, and I thought Tobias Enstrom was able to flourish in a game like that. So to Ezzy's point, I think, in this game, Enstrom may be relied on more because the Detroit Red Wings are not known as a physical squad and frankly aren't a physical squad. So maybe you do put out a guy, Myers and Enstrom against a Zetterberg line. But I'll ask you, Dave. I mean, if you're picking first line, second line, who is the better line? If you're, you watch the Red Wings quite a bit. You're looking at Datsyuk, Helm, and Thomas Tatar. You're looking at Abdelkader, Zetterberg, and Nyquist. I mean, I don't know. That might be a coin flip.
They're both extremely good. I mean, it really is hard. It just Babcock is just such an expert. I mean, it not enough. Obviously, everybody talks about how good this guy is, but it's just unbelievable that he takes. I mean, everybody thought Detroit was on the way down.
Yeah, I don't know.
And he takes his squad, and it really looks like, look, we got the 24th year in a row Detroit is going to make the playoffs.
It's just incredible.
I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah.
It's not like we're not talking like most teams. You have a decline. You're out for a year or two. You rebuild, and then you get back up. Not Detroit. Detroit just keeps. They replace a few parts. And they just keep chugging along. So, I mean, I just can't make enough of Babcock. I mean, he said it in an interview yesterday how he just they didn't know where they were going to be this season and what the team has really done. And you know, of course, he doesn't take any of the credit himself. He just talks about the development of his players. And you've got Tatar, I think he gets like 23 goals. And you've got Zetterberg around 48 points. And you've got this team like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, they're healthy. And they're all playing well. So, I mean, it's remarkable. It really is remarkable because you keep expecting Detroit to be on the way down at some point, and they just never are.
Thomas Tatar is also playing just like under, he's playing 50 and a half minutes a game, guys. I mean, that's not much.
And Richie, you mentioned, you know, it's not a physical team, and I couldn't agree more. This is, and we know that Detroit does not keep enforcers, so they're not going to have, there's no Thorburn right. and Peluso on the Detroit Red Wings, and they haven't, it seems like since the days of Darren McCarty. I mean, sure, they had Bertuzzi on the team the last. Well,
those guys, but McCarty and Bertuzzi and
they
can all play.
Yeah, they can play. They never had. Yeah.
I mean, McCarty couldn't play, he was out of there.
I say Thorbs can't and Peluso can't, but.
Thorbs can. I don't think Peluso can play. Like, the Peluso, to me, in a game like this, is rendered useless.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And they have nobody else to put in there.
And so when you talk about the matchups too, Richie, I think even though the Jets lost to Detroit last year, they beat them twice last year. So they've played the Detroit Red Wings well. I think that the thing with this team, there really is a ton of skill and players coming up from Grand Rapids. You're talking about Nyquist, Tatar, Yurko, and even Shane and Glendening. And Shane and Glendening, Glendening is more of a penalty killer, more kind of a grinder guy that they've got on the third line there. But you've got Steven Weiss, who obviously, when they originally signed him, Richie, they thought he was going to be a top six forward. He's
well,
had all types of injury problems. But now you've got Steven Weiss there, so he doesn't look bad if he's on your fourth line, right? So and he's started to pick up his game after having an injury. So this isn't going to be an easy game, and we know how difficult going into Joe Louis Arena is. It's always been difficult back to the Scotty Bowman days. So, you know, to me, the biggest weakness here on the Detroit Red Wings is their defense. If I'm Kenny Holland, and I will ask Ken Daniels about Alexei Marchenko. He's going to play his fifth game. I know nothing about this guy. Mm-hmm. And Jakob Kindle has been a healthy scratch for big parts of the season.
He's fallen out of favor with Mike Babcock.
He's fallen out of favor. Yeah. And I remember we talked to Ken Daniels about that in November. Yeah. He was a guy that was kind of a staple of that top six. So to me, when you get to the bottom pairing, Brendan Smith's a good defenseman, but you got a rookie defenseman, Russian defenseman in Marchenko. You know, maybe for the Jets' third line of Adam Lowry, there with Michael Frolik and Chris Thorburn, maybe you take advantage of that a little bit. But
the question is, I mean, to that point is you take advantage. So there's the Red Wings matchups on defense on offense, right? Now let's look at that because you're leading into that. If you're the Red Wings, you're likely going to be putting Nicholas Cronwall against the top pairing of the top line of the Jets, which is pretty obviously Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, and Andrew Lett. So then you talk about the other pairings, and Danny DeKeyser's had a real nice year. Real good skater, young player. They signed as an undrafted free agent. I believe it was Michigan State he was at.
Western Michigan, I believe.
Yeah, Western Michigan, playing for Andy Murray. That's right, Dave. And that puts a lot of pressure, guys, on the second line here. And, Drew Stafford has a game under his belt. And we're going to talk more about the line combinations after we have Ken Daniels on. But that matchup, I think, is Cronwell's for sure going to match up against the Jets' top line. They're going to get whatever matchup they really want here. And the other thing is sometimes, we talk about defense pairings against forward lines and the other team. It's also have to take into account forward lines against forward line. And boy, it's tough to play against Zetterberg and Datsyuk. So Scheifele and Little Little's been great this year, and Scheifele's showed it been a little better lately. But that's a big game matchup wise, center versus center against this team.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I know that we get fixated on those forward lines versus deep pairings, which is obviously huge because these are the guys that are going to shut them down, especially when you start to get down low and all that. But you're talking about Zetterberg and Datsyuk. I remember, before the All-Star game, I know Richie doesn't put much stake into the All-Star game. A lot of people don't. But I was surprised that Zetterberg and Datsyuk weren't at the All-Star game because, to me, these guys are both future Hall of Famers. I think we'd all agree with that. And these guys are still playing at a top level. And these guys are so difficult to play against. To me, it's worth the price of admission to see either one of these guys. But when you're talking about Datsyuk, this guy leads by example. And you watch how he plays. And you talk a lot about back pressure, which is a huge part of the NHL these days.
For sure.
Pavel Datsyuk has been doing this for 15 years now.
And you got to think, these guys probably played more hockey than anybody, because Detroit always plays, is always in the playoffs. So it's not like these guys, their seasons end in April. They're still going. So it's interesting to see how, like, these guys have just stood the test of time. And sure, they've been slowed a little bit by injury, but for the most part, they've still managed. I want to throw in one thing. I think that Jimmy Howard might be the biggest unknown right now, because he's come back today for his first game after, you know, he suffered a groin injury, I think, early in January.
Yep.
So
5 weeks, first time in 5 weeks.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, so to me, that is the biggest intangible in the game right now. And the one weakness that the Jets might be able to take advantage of is the rust of Jimmy Howard.
I didn't realize this stat that you passed along to me, Dave, later, latter part of this week, knowing you'd be on the show, of course, and that's that the Jets' record against playoff teams is 7-14-6. I didn't realize that.
And you know what's surprising about that, Rich, is that they've been great against the Central Division.
Yeah. Apparently not against anybody else.
They've had their, you know, varying degrees of success against the Pacific Division, but the playoff teams is a little bit surprising when you consider they've beaten Chicago three times.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that's got to improve, because you do have some games.
Well, yeah. Because to your point, Dave, I mean, you have to improve, Ezzy, because you're playing against a bunch of playoff teams coming up here.
Right.
And they still have, like, what, four games against the Blues?
Yep. Four against the Blues.
I mean, they have had a lot of success against the East. They've eaten up the East for the most part this season. So, I mean, that's good. I mean, Detroit's kind of a top, so it'll be a big test. But tonight it's almost a must win. Every team that the Jets, that's trying to chase the Jets or ahead of the Jets, won last night. Sharks won, Stars won, Canucks won, and who's the last one?
Dallas?
No, I said Stars. Stars, Canucks, Hawks,
San Jose.
No, nope.
It was the King.
Blackhawks.
Blackhawks.
Oh, San Jose won.
Oh, and San Jose. But what I'm getting at is there are four teams that either the Jets are trying to catch or trying to catch the Jets.
Anytime you look on the standings online, like looking at it right now, I mean, this wild card chase is crazy, because the Jets, you know, they had that swoon, and it's hard, you know, and granted, the Flames had one too, and there's different teams that have one, but the Jets are 5 points up on the Minnesota Wild right now for, I guess, to be in the part of the last wild card spot. Minnesota has, and Calgary's behind the Jets, granted, and San Jose has the same amount of points as the Jets, and Vancouver has one less point, But Vancouver has three games in hand. Calgary has two games in hand. Minnesota is 5 points back with three games in hand. And the Kings are 6 points back with three games in hand. So, again, conceivably, guys, if they win, if those teams win both of their all three of their games, they would have the tiebreaker over the Jets, and the Jets would be out of the playoffs, which is amazing to think based on the cushion the Jets had, 2 weeks ago.
Right.
You don't want to look at those standings too much, because you'll have an anxiety attack.
We'll leave it there. When we come back, former Hockey Night in Canada play-by-play guy and longtime play-by-play guy of the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Daniels, will join us to preview the Wings and the Jets, which you can hear tonight on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Legal Curve Radio Show.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
It's 12:30 this Valentine's Day. Freezing, by the way, outside. If people haven't been outside yet or listening on the radio, it's only -41 this morning.
It's a dry cold, though.
-41 on Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. And I believe we have Ken Daniels on the line.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Ken Daniels, play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings, joins us to preview tonight's game of the Winnipeg Jets at Detroit at the Joe Louis Arena. Ken, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ken, first off, Jimmy Howard back today for the first time in 5 weeks since suffering a groin injury. Can you talk about his return and how excited the team is to finally have him back between the pipes?
Well, I think they're excited, but they also know that Peter Mrazek, who filled in and lost just a couple in his absence, was pretty darn good. And I think if you look at it and think that you're basically your third string netminder, and then you mentioned, you know, I can mention that Thomas McCollum also won once, your third and your fourth string goaltenders filled in. I think anybody in the league would have been pretty happy the way that went, because Mrazek's going to back up tonight. Jonas Gustafsson isn't, and he's healthy. So they want to go with the guy who played. I think it worked out well that Jimmy played the other night in Pittsburgh, which was a horrible game for the Red Wings. Mm-hmm. Didn't play well at all, and he came on in the third period, faced four shots, but it got him in there. And I know that Mike Babcock talked to him during the second and said, do you want to go in for the third? So I think they're excited that, in fact, he got a little bit of game action just to feel comfortable. But, you know, one thing about Mrazek, it's a different tendency for this team, because Peter plays the puck so well when he's back there, and that's not Jimmy Howard's forte, playing the puck. So when you have Mrazek in goal, it's a different look, the way the guys seem to move it and set it up. But Jimmy's been so reliable and was so outstanding and would have gone to the All-Star game. Thank goodness he got hurt for him. He didn't have to go to that thing. You know, they're excited to have him back, I think, for stability. But this team, really, the way that Peter Mrazek stepped in, I don't think they're jumping for joy. Oh, boy, Jimmy's back. It's just a confidence factor. Sure, they're glad to have him.
Ken, I remember when we had you on last, it was back in November, the day before the Red Wings were in Winnipeg to play the Jets, and we were asking you about Darren Helm, and we're actually contractually obligated to ask you about Darren Helm by the Helm family from St. Andrews, Manitoba. So he's playing right now with Pavel Datsyuk and Thomas Tatar. How much of a compliment is his speed to that line?
Huge. And, you know, just to be able to go in there and get pucks, and he's been so hard on the puck, too. And prior to the Pittsburgh game, he had a couple of goals his last three, and 10 goals for him, and, you know, more than 20 points. He's just had an outstanding season, and he'll be the first to tell you that when you play with guys like Datsyuk and Tatar, it makes his job easy. But by the same token, I think it makes Datsyuk and Tatar's job easier with Darren Helm, because he can really get guys back on their heels just knowing that he can break out at any time, and so strong in the penalty kill too. And this is a guy up playing some nights upwards of 20 minutes a night. So he's a really valuable guy, and it just shows to the depth of this Red Wing team and what they have when you have Darren Helm playing the wing, and Luke Glendening's playing the wing, Steven Weiss is playing the wing, you know, and then you've got Datsyuk and Zetterberg down the middle, and Sheahan and Anderson down the middle. So they got a lot of guys playing out of position. They have so many centers. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, for Darren, he doesn't really care. I think he still enjoys playing center, and it really worked on faceoffs and was pretty good. But just to be able to use his speed on the wing, too, it's a huge bonus for the Red Wings. So there's your Darren Helm question.
Ken, what would you say is the most dangerous aspect of Thomas Tatar's game?
He's a great shooter, obviously. That's first and foremost. And, you know, the guys were on him because he likes that setup play, and sometimes he'll make one move too many before he shoots. And I think now he's realizing, to your question, I guess, the most dangerous aspect is his shot and the way he can get it off. It's just sometimes he'll defer to try to make a play to a Datsyuk or a Helm or whoever he was playing with, or a Zetterberg at times. So I think that's his most dangerous, but I think what makes him so strong is he's relentless on the puck and can work out of the corner so well. And he's strong on the puck, too. He's not the biggest guy, but he'll certainly, as they say, he'll play a heavy body on the puck. So I think that's what they like most about him. He's just, he's got a confidence about him. He walks into the room, the guys just love him. He's always got a smile on his face. And this is a guy who came into the American Hockey League at 18 and spent more than about 4 years in the American Hockey League. So it was a long time, and he saw a lot of guys getting called up before him. But then, you know, winning the MVP as Grand Rapids went to the Calder Cup and won a championship, I think instilled a lot of confidence in him. And it took a while last year to get going for him, and then with all the injuries, more and more playing time. And you weren't sure this year whether both he and Nyquist could continue the scoring that they did last year, but he's just carrying on, and he's just full of confidence now, and it's working great.
Joined by Ken Daniels, voice of the Detroit Red Wings for Fox Sports Detroit. That game can be heard, of course, on TSN 1290. Dennis Bayak has a call at 6 p.m. start time central. Ken, we talked about Darren Helm, the contractually obligated question that we have about the Manitoba boy, but Justin Abdelkader is, to me, one of the more underrated forwards in the league, and we talk about, you know, Darren Helm complimenting the two forwards he plays with. What about Justin Abdelkader complimenting Zetterberg and Nyquist and being able to do kind of a bunch of different things on a line with that much talent?
It's interesting that, you know, and Pavel Datsyuk, although he's got pretty good line mates now, and you're Darren Helm and Thomas Tatar, but Datsyuk last year just loved playing with Justin Abdelkader. As Pavel himself would say, I play the piano, Justin pulls it. And that seems to be how it works. And Zetterberg's not as quick as he used to be, but Abdelkader now has become a net front presence when it's not Darren Helm on the power play. And Abdelkader's just such a reliable guy, and he gives a guy like Gus Nyquist more room. And, you know, 12 goals, 28 points at Abdelkader, and it speaks to whenever I think down the road and at the start of the year, I know when other teams, you know, the Red Wings have been looking for a right-handed defenseman for the longest period of time. And that's why when Mike Babcock looks at a team like Winnipeg, for example, and you got Myers and you got Buffalo and you got Truba, mm-hmm, yeah, and all the guys playing the right side. And now the Red Wings have one with Alexei Marchenko, who's a rookie, and one up front front and Luke Glendening. Other than that, there's no righties on this team.
Crazy.
Advocator will play the right wing. You know, it doesn't really matter, even though he's a left-hand shot. But he's just so strong. And my point to that was when the Red Wings were looking for a right-handed defenseman, sure, you probably knew that guys like Nyquist and Tatar were untouchable, but it's that next line of guys, and Justin Ablicator's name is always the guy that everybody wants. And for me, he's untouchable. And whether it be when Zetterberg retires and Ablicator will be a longtime Red Wing, and Nick Cronwall may be your next captain, if not to me, it's Justin Ablicator. And that's the leader that this guy has become. He's so valuable.
Ken, I know we've been firing a lot of forward questions at you, but we want to ask you quickly about a few defensemen here. And a guy that I know I've always been a big fan of since his breakout season last year is Danny DeKeyser, of course, playing under Andy Murray there. How have you seen his game develop? Because he signed a little bit late in mid-September there, but how have you seen his game develop from last year, which was his breakout rookie season?
Just steady. I think that Danny, he struggled a little bit early on in the season, and I don't know whether it's contract, you missed some time, and it was a little bit late in coming, I guess, but he's formed a really nice second pair with Kyle Quincy. And, you know, playing behind Cronwall and Erickson, they've become really strong. DeKeyser just moves the puck so well, and he's a big body. He's not overly physical by any stretch of the imagination, but moves the puck well. He's really smart. And I know even years ago when he was playing at Western and I wasn't familiar with the Broncos, and I know that Jeff Blashill, who's now in Grand Rapids, was a Red Wings assistant coach to Mike Babcock at the time, and we were on the plane and I was doing what was then a CCHA game involving Western Michigan, and didn't know the players that well, and I said to Jeff Blashill, who do I, you know, watch for your team that you used to coach? And he says, there's only one guy to watch, and that's Danny DeKeyser. Hmm. And, you know, he just said he's going to be a star. So he put that when DeKeyser, I don't know whether it was his sophomore season at Western at that time. So he's just come a long way. There were 29 other teams besides Detroit who wanted Danny DeKeyser. And I think that, you know, being the local kid, I think his heart was playing here, and I know my broadcast partner, Mickey Redman, and still plays pickup hockey with his dad, Mick. And I think Mickey Redman had a little bit of wooing in there every Tuesday when they played over in Troy to say, you know, I remember the first time Mickey came back and told me, and he said, do you know anything about this DeKeyser kid? And I said, yeah, he plays at Western Michigan. He said, oh, my God, he was playing center. He could fly out there. And I said, boy, he can really skate. And he says, he's a defenseman. I said, oh, my God, a guy like that who can play defense and skate like that. So, you know, he's just, every time you see him, he's just so noticeable. And what was really interesting, when the Red Wings lost Anaheim, and it was DeKeyser's first year, and he was out, I think it was a thumb injury, and I saw Henrik Zetterberg right after that series, and the Red Wings had lost, or he was lost during Anaheim, and then they lost to Chicago that year, and I said, what really hurt in the end? What did you guys in? And he said, the loss of DeKeyser. So that'll tell you, he was playing just as a rookie, and when he got injured, and then Henrik Zetterberg at the end says Danny DeKeyser's loss was the thing that really threw this team for a loop. Wow. It tells you how valuable he was then, so he's really come on.
Ken, final question for you. You mentioned right-handed defenseman the Wings have kind of have sought after for a while. Is that the need heading into the trade deadline March 2nd, or is there anything else you think the Wings might want to add?
That's the need. Without a doubt. And whether, you know, they you're looking at a veteran guy, but I think, you know, Cody Franz's name has always been out there, although he struggled a bit of late for Toronto, and maybe a hip injury that may be scaring some people, but they've been looking at a right-handed defenseman for sure. You know, they always ask for, you know, Red Wing prospects, and they have some coming besides Marchenko, and you've got Ryan Sproul, and you got Nick Jensen. They've got some good ones in Grand Rapids, but whether you look to the Olympic team where Mike Babcock had his righty-lefty combination, and if you'll notice, whenever he speaks about other teams, mm-hmm. he'll talk about their back end just like he did with Winnipeg, a righty-lefty combination. He loves that. And you can even see it on this team, and we've even seen it at times when Marchenko will play on defense with Brendan Smith, and you can just see the ease of a right-hand pass going across the blue line to the other side, where all the lefties playing that side have to turn with it. It matters a lot. It really does, and it's an untold part of the game where people don't think about it, but even if keeping pucks in the offensive zone and the way the Red Wings love to play with puck possession, having a right-handed shooter back there really matters. And also, the Red Wings have done so well, and Johan Franzen's been out of the lineup for the longest period of time with a concussion, and who knows whether he'll be back, and yet, the way the Red Wings have gone, you don't even talk about missing a guy like Franzen. All you're talking about is adding to the blue line depth and a right-handed D, or if they found a star sort of defenseman who may be unrestricted somewhere, and I know Keith Yandel's name has always come up. He's a lefty. But I think if the Red Wings could add depth to their blue line, that's what they'd really want to do. But they asked for, you know, Anthony Mantha's name always come up, is playing in Grand Rapids now. And, you know, Dylan Larkin, he's an untouchable playing at the University of Michigan, for sure. Red Wings first round pick. Nobody's getting Dylan Larkin. They think this kid's going to be a star. And from what I've seen of him, I think so too. But they're looking at that, where maybe some prospects might be moved if they could land a right-handed D.
Ken Daniels of Fox Sports Detroit, thanks very much for joining us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and enjoy the game tonight.
Will do. Thanks, guys. Appreciate that, and enjoy Hockey Day in Canada, of course.
Thanks, Ken. Of course, as we will. Bunch of games today. Of course, Edmonton-Ottawa gets it started in the afternoon. Just Detroit at 6 o'clock. You can hear it on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to talk about the defense pairings of the Jets. Tyler Myers has played, of course, alongside Tobias Enstrom for his first game. Do we like that pairing? It's only one game. Would you move it around? Positives and negatives, we'll talk about that. Drew Stafford on the second line, and a bunch of other Jets chatter. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
On Birchwood, Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock filling in as host today for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk, and Michael DJ Remus. I like the tunes. Before we talk about this great selection of tunes, and Reem, you can keep that going as a bed there.
Clark here?
This segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Chad Daniels. I'm not sure if there's any relation to our guest the past segment, Ken Daniels. But I'll tell you about Ken Daniels. One of the best play-by-play guys in the business.
I watched a lot of Red Wings games when I was in Michigan. I got to tell you, I absolutely loved watching him make the call. Him and Mickey Redmond, they're both excellent. They're a great duo. You know, you see these partnerships that form with these guys who work together for years, and it's just, they've just been dynamic for years.
What do you think we should just do the whole segment with this underneath?
Absolutely, a little mood music.
This is Al Green, right, Rich?
This is Al Green, yeah.
Yeah.
Ezzy and I are bopping to the music. I mean, this is a good time.
This is the song that Remus is going to put on a little later when he's trying to get in the mood and he's finished his second hot dog of the night.
And he passes out on the couch.
Leah's prodding him with a cattle prod, just trying to wake him up.
Play some Marvin Gaye a little bit later, maybe.
Oh, well, yeah, we're going to be. We will take requests. If you want to tweet at us at Illegal Curve, we'll play some romantic music of your choice, of course. And
Rich, what kind of music are you going to be putting on later?
Oh, that's that didn't take too long. I was waiting for that.
It's maybe Valentine's Day for some, but for Ezzy and I, it's throw everybody under the bus day.
Okay, guys, defensive pairings. And we talked about it on Wednesday's show. Drew asked Ezzy and me.
It's Ezzy and I.
No, he wouldn't ask Ezzy and I. He would ask Ezzy and me. So Drew asked me a question, not Drew asked I a question.
Well,
so, don't argue with a literary genius.
Didn't realize the grammar police was in the studio.
Sorry. So and he had asked the combinations were going to be. And I wasn't sure if, you know, I talked to some people. They said, you know, Tyler Myers with an up-tempo kind of skating defense, maybe not the best defensive defenseman, maybe a little bit of a risk. And but Paul Maurice, you know, logged Tobias Enstrom right beside Tyler Myers, where Zach Bogosian, of course, was playing, and he put Dustin Bufflin on the back end with Ben Chiarot, who he had broken up about 5-6 games ago, and put with Tobias Enstrom. Were you surprised at all that Paul Maurice opted to play Bufflin back with Chiarot and not with Enstrom? And if so, why? And if not, why?
Well, the one thing that I noticed that Paul Maurice said when he was talking about this was, he said you want to make as little impact on your team as possible. So you want to just slot the guys in without making a lot of changes. So he didn't want to have to start looking at, you know, he could throw Myers in for Bogosian and he could throw Stafford in for where Bufflin was, and it makes as minimal an impact on the roster as it was composed as possible. So that's what I think that's what Paul Maurice's thinking was. He also said that, you know, I mean, maybe he was going for the twins aspect. He wanted to have the Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, the height disparity has got to be at least a foot and a half.
Hey, we have some young listeners here who might not know that reference.
Sorry, it's a 1980s movie between with Schwarzenegger and DeVito. Look it up. But you know what? I think that was really the thinking of the Jets coach, really, was just that he wanted to make as minimal a change to his roster as possible. So he slotted in Myers for where Bogosian was, and then he moved Stafford to, you know, Bufflin's spot so he could put Bufflin back with Sherrod. Because there was also a comfort there. Like, I think, like, if you notice, Sherrod is very reliant on Bufflin. Like, he uses Bufflin a lot mm-hmm. when he's playing. So I think part of...
You which know, is a good thing.
Which isn't a bad thing, of course. And Sherrod himself has said, like, what a help Bufflin has been to his game throughout the season. You know, since he's gotten here, he said Buff has been so instrumental in helping him and stuff like that. So I think Buff shelters Sherrod a little bit because you got to remember, I mean, he made quite a jump, right? He's going from the AHL to playing big minutes in the NHL. So I think that's kind of what Coach Maurice was thinking. I mean, without obviously knowing exactly what he was thinking.
Yeah, and Dave, based on today's game day skate, they're going to keep Tyler Myers together with Tobias Enstrom, and they might keep that pairing together, guys, going for the next few games. Mm-hmm. But I don't think by any stretch of the imagination you should pencil that pairing in, because when you have a guy, in the sense that's the difficult aspect of this trade for Paul Maurice to manage, Richie. I don't think Drew Stafford's as difficult to manage, because I think you have a situation where you could really plug him into the second line or the third line, and there's not going to be that much of a difference. Obviously, chemistry plays a big part there, but I think there's always the possibility you can move Dustin Bufflin back to the right side of Tobias Enstrom and then move Tyler Myers with Ben Sherratt. And I think that, you know, there are different, I mean, you look at that right side, and I know, right now that's the strong side, but that right side is looking good with Trouba, Buff, and Myers. It really is.
And there's an ice time issue there, guys. Let's be honest. Right. I mean, and a good problem to have. You hear Ken Daniels' last segment, play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings, talk about the fact that Mike Babcock would have won. You know, he has one now in Marchenko, but a right-handed shooting defenseman, and the Jets have three. And they don't just have three right-handed shooting defensemen. We're not talking about Paul Postma here, with due respect. We're talking about Trouba, Buff, and Myers. You know, all... arguably all-star level players.
Yeah, and you know, Dave mentioned correctly that Ben Sherrod, because he came into the Jets lineup with all those injuries, he was sheltered by Dustin Bufflin. You have to wonder, well, would Ben Sherrod be sheltered, even though he's now played 30 games in the NHL, mm-hmm. roughly, would he be as sheltered with playing with Tyler Myers? You could probably make the argument he probably would be. Dustin Bufflin has different aspects of his game.
For sure.
Tyler Myers, even though he has offensive talent, we know Buff, once he likes to get going, coming off the rush, off either wing, and you know, take the puck around, and they have different degrees of physicality. There aren't many guys that are as physical as Buff. So you'd have to think that Paul Maurice, even if he puts Tyler Myers back with Ben Sherrod, it ultimately comes down to this, though, Richie. Who has better chemistry together, and how does he want to distribute those minutes? Because we know Tyler Myers can play more than Dustin Bufflin. Dustin Bufflin's numbers get higher because of the power play minutes, but Bufflin doesn't play as much on the penalty kill. Myers will play more on the penalty kill. So again, it's a good problem to have, and it's something you want to monitor. And when you have different lineup situations, when you get into the playoff situations, then you might have issues, especially when you're talking about speed against certain teams, right? Especially when you think of the Anaheims and the St. Louis's, but right now, I think the line combinations are probably going to stay the same. And if the Jets begin to struggle, and again, they lost to Nashville last game. But I think unless you see them really start to struggle, and I didn't, even though they lost to Nashville, I didn't think they didn't play well. I thought they played really well. They outshot Nashville mm-hmm. pretty badly at times. But I think you'll probably see that stick together for a little bit here.
And you know what, guys? I think it's the options that the Jets have on the back end, and we spoke about it just a few minutes ago, are a heck of a lot better than many other teams have an option. And I also wonder, guys, are Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba, can we not discuss and can the coaching staff not possibly split those guys up? I just wonder about that. That's one thing that because it's as if they can, and again, I mean, Mark Stewart's a solid defender, but I mean, Jacob Trouba drives the bus there, let's be honest, and you wonder if at any point in time down the stretch, those guys get switched out. Because we always talk about what we've been talking about. Is it Enstrom and Myers? I mean, it might be nitpicking. Enstrom and Myers. Is it Bufflin and Sherratt? And never talking about possibly Trouba and somebody else on the left side, and Stewart and somebody else on the right side. And I just wonder if there will be a time that comes over the next 20, 25 games where we're exploring that option.
Right, Richie. And I guess if you're suggesting that, that Trouba is broken up with Mark Stewart, you're moving him up to the top pair, most likely with Enstrom.
Well, I mean, to me, Jacob Trouba is the best defenseman on the team.
Right, so you're not moving him down to the third pairing.
No, I know that. But I guess that's what I'm saying is, you know, how are you, when you're talking about allotting ice time, are you kind of playing them all equally and then splitting it up right. all their time, like even strength and splitting right. up all their time? Because when you get down the stretch, guys, and the Jets, you look at the schedule tonight, you know, Calgary plays Vancouver, there's so many three-point games. Jets, for example, lose tonight. I mean, you're creeping into important territory where these last 20 games will essentially be all playoff games. And do you want to be rolling your three lines because you have a little bit of a weakness on the left side? Again, it's not a huge issue, but do you want to load up and play your top four guys a little bit more and take some pressure off maybe some of the guys who aren't as good?
And, Richie, just to play off with what you're asking here, because I don't think by any stretch of the imagination that, I mean, breaking Stewart and Trouba up is without reason. They play really well together. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. They've played well together for the last 2 years since Trouba came into the NHL. But I guess, you know, if we're spitballing a little bit here, if you're moving Stewart off of that line, then you're probably looking at maybe putting Sherratt with Trouba.
Maybe, yeah, maybe.
So then you're probably moving Stewart with Myers, and then maybe Enstrom and Byfuglien.
I mean, I'm just saying, I think it could be tossed out there. I mean, I think that like Jacob Trouba, you watch him play against Nashville. You watch him play, and I don't know what he was doing. Jacob Trouba, let's call it as it is. Jacob Trouba, odd decision on the Philip Forsberg goal, which ended up being the winning goal in the Nashville game. Getting caught in his wrong side and not jumping out at Forsberg and letting Forsberg pick his corner. That wasn't a good defensive play. But overall, you know, really, to me, is driving the bus in terms of the Jets' back end when it comes to defensive play. And we'll obviously see what Tyler Myers does. But, guys, we're going to be talking about this. This is a going concern here. This team is loaded with talent on the back end, but I think they're still going to need some time with Tyler Myers back there. And, you know, Zach Bogosian had been with the team since Atlanta. So they knew what they had. I mean, obviously, there were good games and bad games, but they knew what they had. Tyler Myers, they're going to learn about quickly, and maybe he's going to flourish. Maybe he'll struggle a bit at the outset, but if he does struggle a bit, the Jets are not in a position here. They're not in a position where they can allow Tyler Myers to, you know, play his way into the lineup and get comfortable when points are at a premium. You know, not in Buffalo anymore. So I think even with Drew Stafford, too, same thing. I mean, they're going to try and have him flourish, but if he can't produce it, then they're not going to keep the lines together
right.
like it's the beginning of the season.
They're not sacrosanct.
The points are just too important. And hey, it's enjoyable to be talking about really important games for this city and fans of this team at this juncture of the season. We're February 14th, and these games mean more than they did last year. The Jets have a realistic shot, and are right now in a playoff position. We've talked about the trade, the roster ramifications for the Jets. Not so much about Buffalo. We had a Buffalo guest on Wednesday's show, but we're going to have our boy Mike Harrington on from the Buffalo News, columnist from the Buffalo News, to talk about this trade, the Kane, of course, the Evander Kane, Zach Bogosian trade from Wednesday of this week. We're going to break that down after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
One hour down, 2 hours to go on Saturday, February 14th, 2015. Valentine's Day. Remus playing a little Van Halen. With the love theme, of course. This segment's brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Before we throw it to Mike Harrington, we should talk about an important piece of pizza. Of course, Adam Toy, producer of H&L and other shows on this station, came in to tell Ezzy and Dave and me that there's some heart-shaped pizza outside. And Ezzy left him in the middle of the
We've never seen Ezzy move that fast.
Never seen him move that quick.
I was about to take this segment off, and then I realized we had Mike Harrington coming up, so I decided to stay.
Mike Harrington, we have him on the line, do we not?
Yeah, what do you mean you're going to take the segment off? You got to stay. This is the hottest week ever in Buffalo, Winnipeg.
That's right, Mike. I wouldn't dare leave opportunity to talk to you about this big trade.
Thank you very much.
Mike, what has been the overall consensus of this trade in Buffalo?
Well, I'm fascinated by this trade, guys, because the consensus of most people in Winnipeg is, wow, we got the better of the deal. Mm-hmm. The consensus of most people in Buffalo is, wow, we got the better of the deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really interesting to me. I mean, clearly Winnipeg is the better of the deal now simply because Evander Kane can't play. And we'll see how much that can help the Jets going forward and making the playoffs and maybe going deeper into the playoffs. And, you know, people in Buffalo are really hot to see Evander Kane. I mean, you know, I mean, which Evander Kane do we see? Do we get to see the guy who might develop into a 30 or 40 goal scorer? Do we get to see the guy who has been a problem child? And that's going to really determine how this trade goes.
Mike, as you know, there's so many elements to this trade. We've heard that Tyler Myers and, like, players like Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford were potentially going to be moved out of Buffalo, and we obviously heard that Evander Kane was going to be moved out of Buffalo. But as far as the timing goes and the size of the trade, this is one of the biggest blockbuster deals we've seen in recent years. What surprised you most about this trade?
Well, you know, the biggest thing that surprised me, I think, was the amount of pieces the Sabres moved. When you look at getting Bogosian and Kane, those are two NHL players, but, you know, you move Tyler Myers, Andrew Stafford, and I kind of throw out Stafford, he's a rental, okay. Mm-hmm. Stafford and Myers and a first-round pick and Armia and Brendan Lemieux. I wrote my comment, how many more ands did Tim Murray have here? Sabres gave up a lot, and that really surprised me. I was surprised Myers got moved at all. I think he needed to knock his socks off offer to move him. He got one by getting Evander Kane. He wasn't, you know, let's get rid of the fallacy right now, guys. The Sabres were not shopping Tyler Myers. They were only taking incoming calls on Tyler Myers. There were no outgoing calls on Tyler Myers. They really needed to have a Boffo deal and to move him, and Tim Murray felt this was one to make.
So my question to you then is, what do you think Tyler Myers will turn into?
Well, I think it's a better situation already, even what he said the first night in Nashville. The minutes he was playing in Buffalo, 24, 25 minutes, hard minutes, because mm-hmm. they just can't get the puck out of their end. I mean, now he doesn't have to be on the number one pair. He's got a team that can move the puck. He's got some forwards who can take the puck. But the pressure relief off the shoulders of Tyler Myers right now has to be immense. And I really think that'll help his play tremendously. And, you know, he already will be a 20-minute-a-game guy for the Jets. And, you know, he can be better in his own end. But I just think, you know, you got to understand how tough it is for a guy to play in a situation like Buffalo right now. I think he's going to feel a tremendous sense of liberation here.
Joined by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, breaking down the Kane-Bogosian big trade for Tyler Myers and as Mike Harrington just pointed out. Mike, there's rumors this week, and I mean, they seem to be corroborated to some extent, that Brendan Lemieux was not going to re-sign, or at least had informed the Sabres that he wasn't going to sign an entry-level contract with them. Is that the case? And if so, why would he not want to sign?
Well, that rumor started out of Ottawa, and Brendan Lemieux has done interviews, came to development camp, has done interviews with Buffalo media during the season. There's no indication of any unhappiness. And Tim Murray said that simply, Brendan Lemieux informed that he wasn't signing this year. The Sabres were interested in getting him signed. He wasn't signing this year. They still have control for him for another 16 months or whatever. So I think that wasn't that big a factor. Murray said that, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff asked for Brendan Lemieux as part of the trade. That was the factor in why Buffalo traded him. They weren't looking to trade him. He's had a really good year in Barrie. And, you know, I think probably, you know, Claude Lemieux's his agent, they were disappointed he wasn't taken in the first round. They probably said to Buffalo, we want the max rookie contract. And I'm sure Buffalo said to him, you were a second-round pick. We're not giving you that. So eventually there was going to have to be some negotiation there. So everybody's saying, well, when you said he wasn't going to sign in Buffalo, no. People are leaving out two important words, this year. So I don't think that was a huge factor in the trade at all.
Mike, we wanted to ask you about Joel Armia. I've watched him very briefly at the World Juniors, and all I know about Joel Armia is what scouts have said. What were the expectations for Joel Armia in Buffalo?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, because this was the first year he's really blossomed in the AHL. I mean, I think you look at a guy who's a first-round pick. You know, he's a first-round pick now in 2011. That's a long time. But they were starting to see the fruits of their labor, I think, in Rochester this year. You know, he's a little injury-prone. He's had trouble staying on the ice at times. We haven't seen much at the NHL level in training camp and exhibition games. He got called up one game this year in Detroit. And really, it was pretty disastrous. He didn't do anything. But he's had a nice year in the AHL. I think he would have probably had a good chance to make the team next year. But yeah, I mean, his window is closing, but the thing about him is just a ton of talent, a ton of skill, you know, with the puck, and I think, you know, he's going to get a legitimate chance there. And yeah, could he be an NHL player? Absolutely. We haven't seen it yet, but I don't think anybody had written him off.
Mike, Winnipeg and Buffalo seem to be at the butt end of a lot of jokes, the punchline, if you will. And so the question we have is, if Kane didn't like Winnipeg, do you think that there's any chance he's going to love playing in Buffalo?
Well, you know, it's an interesting dilemma. You know, there's a lot of factors there, I think, you know, internally. I think the guys had tired of him in the locker room, it seems like. You know, is this just a case he wants to get out of Winnipeg? You know, maybe. You know, young. I mean, there's a lot of things there. I think, you know, in Buffalo, you know, you have a town that is really starting to blossom and burgeoning downtown area now, with Terry Pegula building his $172 million facility. You know, you have an NFL team. It's a little, you know, a little bigger place. But I, you know what, guys? Is it a bad place? Is Winnipeg a bad place? None of these places are bad places to play hockey when they have winning teams, are they?
Nope, absolutely not.
And that's the biggest the biggest thing. Vander Kane has never played a playoff game, has he, in Atlanta or Winnipeg? You know, if he suddenly comes to Buffalo and they're going for the Stanley Cup, Buffalo will be a great place to play. Ultimately, that's what all these guys want. It really isn't, oh, I hate this city or that city. It's just, I want to have a chance to win. And in his case, maybe he just wanted to get away from that group of players. But, right. Yeah, the locker room dynamic here, when he gets here to Buffalo, is going to be watched like a hawk at all times.
Mike Harrington joins us from the Buffalo News to talk about the big trade this week, the blockbuster trade that saw Tyler Myers end up with the Winnipeg Jets, Drew Stafford, amongst others. You know, it's kind of, you know, some people may argue it's a quantity for quality trade. But, Mike, I want to focus more on the Buffalo perspective in terms of, you know, they come through town and they're not exactly a difficult team to play against. And we were talking about in the first hour, with the additions of Kane, which the Sabres fans will see next year, and Zach Bogosian. Certainly, the Sabres have added a lot of physicality. Is that something that Tim Murray, obviously skill's a factor here, but is that something that Tim Murray was looking to add to the squad to make them, you know, more difficult to play against?
Yeah, absolutely, and he even used that exact term when he was discussing a trade the other day at the press conference. They have to become harder to play against. You know, it's a very nasty word to use in hockey parlance. The Sabres are soft. We all know it. We all see it. We can see it with our eyes, or we can study Corsi numbers till the cows come home, and the Corsi numbers are horrible, historically bad, but just watch the game. They're soft. They never have the puck. You know, I just did a story today in the Buffalo News that their goals for average right now is the lowest in the NHL in the last 80 years.
Wow.
And it's not because their forwards are terrible. It's because they never have the puck because they're a soft team. You know, they've had Corsi ratings in the 20s a couple games recently for a whole game. So they need to become tougher on the puck. They need to become tougher in the defensive zone. Bogosian will help that. They need to be tougher in the offensive zone, in the neutral zone. Certainly Evander Kane will help there. They have to make a few more additions in that area. But that's the biggest thing. Why don't they score goals? It really starts in their defensive zone because they're a soft team. You know, when you don't have the puck, you don't shoot the puck. I mean, they've had 10 shots on goal in a game twice this year, guys. No Crazy. NHL team had done that since 2008 in any game.
Crazy.
Mike, I know you've wrote about this recently in your column for the Buffalo News, saying that if the Buffalo Sabres, Tim Murray, decide not to go with Ted Nolan this year, that Luke Richardson, of course, former NHL defenseman, currently a coach with the Binghamton Senators, might be a candidate to be the next head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. How real of a possibility do you think that is, I guess?
Yeah, well, I think the first possibility is I see almost zero chance of Ted Nolan returning. That's the first thing. They're certainly going to move on with a new coach at this point. I mean, Nolan admitted to us the other day he found out about the Myers trade like we did. So if the coach isn't finding out from the GM that Tyler Myers is getting traded, the coach is on outside of the loop and isn't going to get in. Richardson is the guy we keep hearing that Murray has wanted all along. They have, obviously, a relationship back with Murray's with Ottawa. I do think the ownership, Terry Pegula, may want to kick the tires a little bit and just find out where Mike Babcock or Dan Bylsma stand right now, especially once we find out the draft lottery. Does Buffalo get McDavid? Does Buffalo get Eichel? And we'll see how that one goes. I mean, they just hired Rex Ryan to coach the Bills. And, you know, I got to believe Terry and Kim Pegula loved the way they won the press conference with Rex Ryan. they could use some goodwill with this hockey team with all the tanking talk. I could see them wanting to win the press conference with Mike Babcock or Dan Bylsma also. But ultimately, I think Tim Murray would like Luke Richardson. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think Mike Babcock wants to win fast and get paid. Well, he can win in Detroit. He can get paid in Toronto and Buffalo. But can he win in Toronto and Buffalo? A real interesting dynamic.
Mike, this is we're talking about this trade all week, and this isn't the first time that the Jets and Sabres organizations have made a trade before, but does this one eclipse the Dale Hawerchuk and Phil Housley trade?
Not yet. You know, you're talking there, a Hall of Famer and, you know, a U.S. Hockey Hall of Famer who could someday get the call to Toronto. You know, right now it's the biggest trade everybody's talking about because of social media and everything, but, you know, the Sabres made a trade for Pat LaFontaine. They made a trade in the 80s where they traded Jim Schoenfeld and Danny Gare, who were two former captains of their team, and they went to the Cup Final in the 70s. Down the road, maybe the Sabres will look at this trade as a key movement going forward on a Stanley Cup run. But, you know, it's one of the biggest trades you're going to see now in the salary cap era. It's hard for teams to make these kind of deals. Instantly, the Sabres moved to the top of the line under Vander Kane, when it was obvious the Jets had to make a move simply for no other reason they could handle salary and have a lot of moving parts. So it's tough to make those kind of deals now, but, boy, this is a whopper. I'd be hard-pressed to think any trade before the trade deadline this year is even going to come close to this one.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, thanks very much for joining us. And, Mike, we hope that next season you're going to be coming to town for the Evander Kane return game to Winnipeg, because that should be a lot of fun.
Wow, that should be quite an event. Yeah, I'm sure I will be there for that one. I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Thanks very much for joining us,
and
Mike.
We'll make sure, Mike, it's not when it's really cold in Winnipeg.
It's only minus 41 this morning, Mike.
How about, all right, we'll schedule it for October right now.
Mike Harrington, thanks very much. When we come back after this trade, Craig Button said the Jets have arguably the best prospect group in all of hockey. We're going to debate that and talk about possibly trading a prospect or a draft pick with the trade deadline March 2nd, only 2.5 weeks away. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
It's about 1:17.
This pizza's amazing.
Saturday on Valentine's Day. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, part of Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Tonight, of course, Dennis Bayak, Paul Edmonds have the call on TSN 1290, 6 o'clock start time. H&L will be after us, part of the Game Day coverage. And, of course, Rick Ralph, you heard of him. He starts at 5 o'clock, and he'll take you all the way through till about 10:30 tonight.
The pride of Halifax.
The pre- and post-game show. See the pride? I guess this would be a nice play, Pride in the Name of Love.
By the way, I don't know how Dave and I are going to do this segment because we're both scarfing down free pizza right now.
Yeah, that's Ezra Ginsburg's voice you hear. David Minuk, you don't hear because he's chewing on pizza. Michael Remus is getting us on and off the air. Richard Pollack, of course, filling the host chair for Drew Mindell.
You just refer to yourself as Richard Pollack?
Well, yeah, what else do I refer to myself as?
Oh, was that in the third person, or was you, or were you just introducing yourself?
I guess it was in the third person.
Richard the Linguist.
By the way, so just to let everybody know that, you know, we said last segment there's some heart-shaped pizza in the hallway. And between breaks, Ezzy didn't go grab a piece of pizza. He grabbed the entire box. And it's
by the way, it's not heart-shaped. It's just regularly cut.
No. Boy, you really must be hungry. It was clearly in a heart shape, bro.
What kind of heart is that?
Well, you've got a broken heart now because you made half of it.
No heart-shaped box from Nirvana. I think that'll be cutting a little bit too edgy there. Guys, we just had Mike Harrington on the Buffalo News. I thought it was interesting, by the way, guys, what Mike said is that people in Buffalo think the Sabres won the trade. People in Winnipeg think that the Jets won the trade. And I really do think when you have a trade like this, it's not, you know, a rental, really. I mean, Drew Stafford is maybe a rental. They may re-sign him. I think it'll depend on the way he performs and how they feel he fits into the Jets structure and, you know, their lines and what happens with Michael Frolik. So there's a bunch of variables at play. But this type of trade I thought was interesting because I was of the opinion that both, you know, GMs probably thought that they did well. And I think Tim Murray looks at it from the perspective of, you know, quantity to an extent, more than quality. And I think that quantity factor gives the Jets a nice flexibility, and they think Tyler Myers is a big part of the future. If not here, then at least a piece that they can move for a forward going forward, depending on what happens with Dustin Byfuglien and the decisions that Kevin Cheveldayoff has to make. But let's talk about the prospect pool. Many people are saying, you know, for sure top five pool of prospects the Jets have now, and maybe even the best prospect pool in the National Hockey League. A difficult subject for at least for me to opine on, because you know, a lot of these guys I haven't seen. I've seen very little of you know, Nick Batan, and seen him in person a couple of times, but not much. And you know, Josh Morrissey. But overall, the people who do follow these guys, and Guy Fleming is going to be joining us next segment to talk about the prospect pool that the Jets have. Do you guys think that the depth in the prospect pool, and I think it, you know, we know that there's depth there. Do you think the depth in the prospect pool should result in the Jets trading maybe a higher draft pick or even a prospect to add a player coming down the stretch here with the deadline being March 2nd?
It really is, Richie, the $64,000 question. And I think, you know, just to address the first part of it, I think when you put the word top, and I know, you know, here we like to say top five, top ten and all that, but I think you're going to be hard pressed to find any scout or anyone really in the hockey world that doesn't at the very least say the Jets have the top 10 prospects, if not the top 5 prospects. And we've seen how well they've drafted in the last couple of years, and even in the 2011 draft, mm-hmm. which obviously produced Mark Scheifele and Adam Lowry. So you're talking about, and specifically the 2013 draft that produced Josh Morrissey, Nick Batan, Eric Comrie, mm-hmm. not to mention this last draft that produced Nick Ehlers, but you're talking about really, and on Wednesday we mentioned this, the cupboard is full of prospects now. And you've taken Nick Ehlers, Josh Morrissey, Nick Patan, Eric Comrie, and now you've added Brendan Lemieux and Joel Armia. And so I think it's obviously subjective of me to say that the Jets have the best prospects, because teams like the Buffalo Sabres, Calgary Flames, New York Islanders, they have, to mention a few teams, are considered to have the top prospect pool in the NHL by sites like Hockey's Future. And I guess other sites like Hockey News and publications like the Hockey News might disagree with that, Dave. But I think here you're talking about a situation where the Winnipeg Jets are set up very nicely in mm-hmm. all positions, Richie. And you know, you could start with Josh Morrissey, who I think is the best candidate to play for the Jets next year. I know, you know, fans are excited about the prospects of a guy like Nikolai Ehlers or Nick Patan. I think Ehlers is still a possibility to play in the QMJHL next year. Mm-hmm. And I think Nick Patan, I would believe, is going to spend some time in the AHL, which is my opinion. But I think when you're talking about Joel Armia, he might get some time here coming up for the Jets, you know, in March or April. And then Brendan Lemieux, again, another guy. So I think, you know, if you're talking about, again, second part of your question, Richie, you know, could the Jets possibly move a draft pick and a prospect? I think now, as compared to 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Chevy has that ability now because he has an abundance of draft picks and prospects that he can choose from. And if you looked at it a couple of years ago, obviously they're buyers now as opposed mm-hmm. to maybe being mm-hmm. sellers. But I think a couple of years ago, I don't think Chevy was even considering that. Now I think he'd be considering it.
I think the interesting question also is, you know, Dave, I want to get in here quickly before I want to hear your opinion, because the depth in the prospect pool to me is different than high-end draft prospect talent. Like, do you want all of these players coming through who are going to be NHL guys, or do you want three guys who are going to be top-end guys? I don't know. I think that's interesting. So when you're comparing, I don't know how the criteria is, of course, subjective, as he mentions. But I think Nikolai Ehlers is your top-end guy that you're talking about, and Josh Morrissey is probably second in line in that respect, and the rest of the guys, where do they fall? I think that's interesting. They may not be top-end guys, but they may be your second, third-line guys, and you're hoping for second line, I think, for some of those guys. What do you think, Dave? Do you think that if you were Kevin Cheveldayoff, would you be it more open? I don't even think Kevin Cheveldayoff is probably open to trading a second-rounder before this trade. I think a second-rounder is certainly something that would be tossed into play now. Do you think he will make a trade involving a prospect or a high draft pick being above a third rounder?
Well, you know, I almost think he has to, and the reason why is because we saw it recently. I mean, the Jets were carrying three defensemen,
mm-hmm.
and they had no forwards to, you know, to insert into the lineup.
Even tonight, like, why is Anthony Peluso playing?
But that's my whole point. Yeah. The point is that right now it's great to be able to say the cupboard is stocked now, mm-hmm. and it's no longer bare, but the problem is you need to be able to have a little more dynamic a player than an Anthony Peluso, you know, when you're playing a Detroit Red Wings. Because mm-hmm. really, there's very little value. Of course, he's going to get a hat trick now that we're saying this.
Yeah.
But there's very little value in my mind to having a guy like Anthony Peluso in the lineup against Detroit. Because I just don't see it. So I could see the Jets very easily making that trade because they need to. And further to your point about Joel Armia, Kevin Cheveldayoff, when he was speaking in his presser, mentioned that he was going to St. John's, but also that he would be a potential call-up. So, I mean, maybe the Jets want to give him an opportunity to kind of get some experience within their system in St. John's and then bring him up. Because clearly they don't have a lot of faith in Patrice Cormier or like any of the other guys who are down in St. John's right now because they're not calling him up. Like, you know, Carl Kling, people, fans, I read about this because I write about it every day, and fans are clamoring, let's get up Klingberg, let's get up, what's his name from Cleveland?
John Albert.
John Albert. So, you know, the fans want the these guys. They say, why not give them a chance? But the team, who sees these guys? I mean, the reality is, what fans have to realize is, the team is in constant talk with Keith McCambridge and the St. John's Ice Caps brain trust. So they know what's happening. They know the guys to get called up. So if they're not calling these guys up and they're still sticking with Anthony Peluso in the lineup, there's a reason. The reason is the team doesn't feel that they have what it takes to add to the team right now. So if that's the case, and you've got all these guys who are coming up in within the system, whether it be in St. John's or whether it be in college or whether it be in junior, I mean, that's great. But is that going to help you right now? Because right now, if you think you've got a team and you've got to convince guys like Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien and Blake Wheeler that, okay, this trade shows that you want to make a play for the playoffs, but do you have that depth? Okay, great. The top lines are more solidified, but what about your bottom lines? And are you going to be, you can't do that from St. John's because clearly the team hasn't done that.
It can be important to note, I mean, some people have been referencing Sean Brigham as a possibility, bringing in a winger for the Jets. He actually demanded, his agent demanded a trade last night from the Florida Panthers. Harvey Felikov of the Sun Sentinel in Florida reported that trade. His agent, I believe Todd Diamond, requested that trade. So a guy I think people thought was going to be moved anyways, he might not be the right fit necessarily, but it will be somebody that will almost surely now be available.
Not a big fan of Sean Bergenheim. Yeah. 31 years old, you know what he is this year. And, you know, if you look at his career stats, very wildly inconsistent forward. He's got a scoring touch, not someone that I would be going out of the way to acquire. I think, you know, next segment we're going to get into this. I think there's better options than Sean Bergenheim. And I know, again, Daniel Winnick has been mentioned. Not a big fan of his. I don't think he's much of an upgrade over Thorburn, to be honest with you. If they're going to move a draft pick for that, I wouldn't do it. But I think when you're talking about whether or not Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff will make a trade, Richie, I think you have to factor in as well, how far do the Jets think they're going in the playoffs this year? Are you willing to trade a prospect and a second-round pick, for example, to get one of the players that
we're
talking
about? Let me ask you. Is it worth it? Right now, they come up and they're going to play... I guess they would play against the if they finish fourth and they play either St. Louis, Chicago, or Nashville, whatever it may be. I guess there's a crossover possibility of Anaheim. Okay, so there's basically four teams they can play in the first round here: Nashville, St. Louis, Chicago, Anaheim. Of those four, do you think they can beat all of them?
In a seven game series, I would say no.
How many do you think they can beat
out of those teams?
Yeah,
none of them.
I think they can beat Nashville and Chicago in a seven game series.
I mean, losing the second round or winning the second round?
I think St. Louis, I don't think they can get through, but I think they can give it a shot. And so you wonder, like, if that gets you into the final eight teams, I mean...
First of all, for the bottom line, that's a loss.
But you look at people are going to look at, you know, beating Chicago three times, and the reality is when you get to the playoffs, that doesn't mean much.
And I'm not saying that they will. I'm saying I think they can beat... I mean, anybody can beat anybody here, but I think the Jets have a legitimate shot against Nashville and a legitimate shot against Chicago. I think that they'd have trouble with St. Louis in a seven-game series, and they'd trouble with Anaheim in a seven-game series. Doesn't mean they would easily handle the other two teams. That's just my perspective.
And it's a valid perspective, Richie. And you look at history. But last year, Minnesota upset Colorado. 2012, LA upset, in the first round? Vancouver, when they won their first cup. So, I mean, if you're talking about history... Playoff seeding, you know, me talking about, you know, regular season not meaning much. Seeding doesn't mean much. If you get into the playoffs, you have a shot. The Rangers were a low seed and they got to the Stanley Cup finals.
That's what I mean.
So
if you have a shot, who knows now? I mean, maybe it is worth adding a little bit and taking a chance. Because how many teams in the NHL, this is my personal opinion, how many teams in the NHL are that particularly good this year? I don't think it's a good quality year. I think the Jets, in my perspective, is that the Jets have moved up a bit in terms of their quality of play. And I think a bunch of the top teams have moved down. Like, how many teams... I don't see an intimidating force. I've seen a few good teams through town. I'm talking upper echelon, big-time squads. I think there are some upper echelon squads that are really good, but I don't think there is the level that there's been in the past. I think the Blackhawks are not at the same level. The Kings are not at the same level. Certainly the Sharks are not at the same level. Vancouver's, I mean, a lot of the good teams have fallen back. And some of the teams that weren't as good have come up a bit. I think the Jets are one of those teams. So I think there's an opportunity here. And, I mean, of course you want to build a sustain, you want to sustain your, you know, a significant chance of being a good team every year. But by forfeiting a second round pick in a deal, is that going to compromise?
Especially
that?
Because it's such a deep draft. I mean, because this is a draft. I mean, we were at the draft last year, and literally the amazing thing is we were at the draft last year, and we were on the bus back, and we were talking with the team executives and scouts, and they were already talking about 2015.
They were,
and they were already excited about this draft. So I mean, like, you can't be too cavalier about trading away a second round pick in this draft because it's significant. But it would also mean you could probably get more for it, simply by virtue of the fact that it's a deeper draft.
And you have two first-round picks this year when you didn't have two first-round picks a week ago.
Right.
That's a huge factor. Draft picks, prospects. When we come back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we're going to have Guy Flaming on from the Pipeline Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton to break down the Jets' prospect pool. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.